Hello, Tierra Curry. Welcome to KABU.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here.
Tierra Curry is a senior scientist and Saving Life on Earth campaign director for the Center for Biological Diversity. She's one of those tireless and vastly outnumbered people, still influential, trying to stop the relentless march of those who are plundering the planet for wealth, profit, and a demented sort of status and honor. Those are the people who are generating conditions for the fourth great extinction, including possibility us Homo sapiens. Prior to joining the center in 2007, she worked as an amphibian field biologist, environmental educator, community organizer. Last November, 2 months ago, she was an observer at the United Nations 15th Conference of the Parties on Protecting Biodiversity. She wasn't a delegate because the U.S. Senate refused to ratify the agreement and be part of it. But the United States still has an enormous and unfortunately deleterious influence on the proceedings. The bulk of this interview will cover the great significance of two conferences, the Conference on Biodiversity and the conference just a month ago on climate change. But first, tell us about your own personal journey from where you grew up in the mountains of coal country in eastern Kentucky to become senior scientist and campaign director for the center.
Sure, Bill. Thank you. I grew up in Appalachia in eastern Kentucky, which is an incredibly beautiful and diverse ecosystem of hardwood forest with more salamanders than anywhere else on Earth. So it was beautiful. And the coal companies, unfortunately, have a long history of just ravaging the land there. They tear down the mountains to get the coal and then move on. And so I grew up exploring the natural world and falling in love with frogs and butterflies and birds and even snakes. But then the coal company mined the mountain behind my house and then the mountain in front of my house. And so they ruined our well water. They cracked our windows. So from a very early age, I had this strong sense of injustice in that I needed to change the world and protect biodiversity and help protect the human community from these corporations. So I hardly remember a time when I didn't feel like I needed to take action to protect nature and vulnerable communities. And I was really fortunate to get a job at the Center for Biological Diversity as a conservation biologist because I'm really passionate about extinction. I think it's the ultimate injustice that humans are driving the plants and animals we share the planet with off the planet, especially since we're another species here. So I'm very grateful to be able to fight extinction as my day job and as my passion.
Kara, tell us, before evaluating the two recent conferences, tell us why they are so significant and why the Center for Biological Diversity sent a number of people to both of them.
Right. So the Conference of the Parties on Climate Change and on the Convention on Biological Diversity just happened in the past few months. The Convention on Biological Diversity Conference of the Parties is every decade to work out a global biodiversity framework. So the meetings were supposed to happen in 2020, but because of the COVID-19 pandemic, they got pushed until this year. And the Conference on the Parties on Climate Change meets more often. But these are significant because it's a way when the entire global community comes together to try to figure out how we're going to maintain a livable planet and protect humanity, but also the species we share the planet with, and also address things like poverty and injustice. So they're the biggest questions of our time, and the entire global community meets to try to hash out agreements. And as you might imagine, because different stakeholders have very different intents, the meetings are contentious and dramatic, and the agreements that come out of them are often more watered down than activists would like for them to be.
My sense is that most of the world's countries, many very poor, some developing, a few industrialized and rich, but all of them look to those conferences as extremely important places for them to have influence.
For sure. So for the countries that are party to the Convention on Biological Diversity, the framework that comes out of that meeting becomes their national biodiversity strategy. So the goals that are set are what those countries are working towards over the course of the decade. And a lot of countries even have full-time staff that work on them and funding through various international agreements. And for climate change, the thing that comes out of those meetings is really how bad it's going to get here on Earth. And so the agreement to try to keep climate change, to keep warming below 1.5 degrees Celsius, is imperative for us to maintain a livable planet. And to do that, we have to get off of fossil fuels. There's no question we have to move away from fossil fuels. And so this year's climate conference of the parties was very disappointing in that there was no movement to get off of fossil fuels. There was some language adopted to move away from unabated coal, and that means relying on unproven carbon capture and storage technologies. But the big oil producing countries just bullied through no agreement to reduce oil and gas use. The pivotal thing that did come out of it was, for the first time, countries agreed to a fund to protect countries that are most vulnerable to damage from climate change. But unfortunately, in a parallel with the biodiversity agreement, details were not worked out. And so the big thing that came out of the Convention on Biological Diversity conference of the parties was an agreement to protect 30% of all the Earth's land and waters. But there were no details on what would qualify as protected or how that would actually play out, similar to the fund for climate damaged countries. And so these commitments were important, and they're important because it's what the whole world agreed to, but the details haven't been worked out as to how it's actually going to be realized.
This is Bill Resnick here for KBOO Radio, our old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Tierra Curry, grew up in coal country in eastern Kentucky, now a senior scientist and campaign director for the Center for Biological Diversity. So far, we've discussed the significance of UN conferences of the parties to deal with the great international issues like peacekeeping, hunger, poverty and hunger, treatment of the super subordinate like women and racial minorities. We're talking about the Climate Change Conference and the Species Extinction Conference, both of them in the last couple months. You attended, let's get back to the conference on biodiversity, and were a close observer on climate change. In your discussion, you talked about the one gain in the biodiversity conference. It was a promise to protect 30% of the whole planet from human action that would jeopardize their enormous contributions to healthy ecosystems. My sense is that that was part of what I call a greenwashing strategy by the U.S. corporations. Why don't we start with both of these conferences? My reading about them, admittedly mostly from the left, but also the New York Times and other sources, the corporate people have managed to vastly outnumber the environmentalists at these conferences. The biggest delegations are from petrostates like Saudi Arabia and many of the others, Russia. And well, why don't you tell us how they were active at both conferences?
The climate conference, the fossil fuel industry sent so many lobbyists and representatives that, I mean, it could have just been a fossil fuel meeting, except for the environmental justice community who was there, who was very vocal, and who were successful in pushing through the fund to help compensate the countries that are most vulnerable to climate damage. But the solution is going to be to get off of fossil fuels, and progress was not made on that front, largely because of the presence of the fossil fuel lobbyists. And I mean, I like to think that they know that they're a dying industry and that their days are numbered, and that's why they're fighting so hard. But it just means the environmental justice community has even more work to do to help everyone realize that we do have to transition from fossil fuels if we're going to save a livable planet. The Conference of the Parties for the Convention on Biological Diversity didn't have the same presence of lobbyists, but lobbyists, like the United States is not a party to the convention, and that's largely because of lobbyists from Big Pharma who don't want to compensate countries for their biological resources. When corporations profit from them, especially when it comes to genetic resources. And so that tie-up has prevented the United States from becoming a party to the convention, but they were still able to reach an agreement to protect 30% of the Earth. But one of the big things that I was there pushing for was for an agreement to stop extinction. really, to save a livable planet, we have to save the plants and animals that are parts of the ecosystems that we all depend on. Biodiversity is essential to human health and well-being. It's essential to our economy, and we have to protect it as a top priority. But even at the Convention on Biological Diversity, there was no commitment to stop extinction. And so that was very disappointing. There was a commitment to reduce extinction rate and risk and some commitment to restore ecosystems, but it definitely wasn't enough. So in that sense, both of these conferences didn't accomplish what they really needed to accomplish, which was to get away from fossil fuels and to commit to ending human-caused extinction.
Yeah. You know what we should explain, I think, something that I had not appreciated, actually, how stopping extinctions, not just of tigers and polar bears that get a lot of attention, but in fact, insects and microbes are essential to maintaining especially soil diversity, but also just the greenhouse gases and their fixation. If we destroy our soils, we are in fact committing suicide, and we're really on the path of that. Tell us about it.
Bill, you're absolutely correct. Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, has given several prominent speeches now saying that humanity must end our suicidal war against nature. And that's because our entire existence is propped up by the water cycle, by forests that produce oxygen, by wetlands that store carbon and filter water, and by pollinators and ecosystems that provide us with food. And so we like to think that we're separate from nature, but actually we're entirely dependent on it, and we've always taken it for granted, and we have to turn around and take care of it. And so a lot of people who oppose endangered species like to point out any individual species like the snail darter and say that it's blocking progress and hurting the economy. But the reality is that our destiny is tied to the well-being of all of the plants and animals we share the planet with, from snails to freshwater mussels to bees to monarch butterflies, the species that are beautiful and the species that aren't so beautiful. We really need to protect all of them to secure our own well-being. And also, I think we need to protect them because it's the right thing to do, because they have as much of a right to be here as we do. And so really, it comes down to values. And I think that getting people to move towards protecting things comes down to getting them to see and appreciate them, and also to understand the connections between everything.
This is Bill Resnick talking to Tierra Curry, who grew up in the coal fields of Eastern Kentucky. She's now a senior scientist and campaign director for the Center for Biological Diversity. So far, we've discussed the significance of the UN conferences of the parties to deal with all sorts of profound and international issues, peacekeeping, poverty, and hunger. Also, the super subordinate treatment of the super subordinate, like women and racial minorities. We just discussed the two conferences in the last 2 months, its importance to prevent extinction, and also the relation of biodiversity to climate change and extinction. Let's go a little bit further into the climate change conference. It did promise to compensate poor countries for loss, that is, for the great losses they are incurring because of climate change. But my sense is those promises are really easy to make and even easier to ignore. For example, in 2009, they pledged $100 billion to compensate those countries and help them adapt. Well, it's been ignored by most major powers, and the U.S. continuously reiterates demands that all major polluters, including China and India, contribute to the fund. Well, China and India say you caused it, we didn't, even though they're now the world's greatest polluters, but still a minority of the greenhouse gas concentration. And they say we're poor, you're rich. You have to give much more than us. And the U.S. has decided, in their wisdom, to ignore them. In any event, it seems to me that that promise to reimburse the countries for loss and damage, it's sort of, again, it's greenwashing. The countries and the people who run them, the elites who run them, can easily make those promises and don't keep them. And there's nobody enforcing them. How do you respond to that issue?
I mean, in some ways, the entire compensation fund without a commitment to get off fossil fuels is greenwashing. It rings hollow because the more fossil fuels we burn, the greater the damage is going to be, the more funding there's going to need to be for mitigation. And ultimately, we won't be able to repair everything if we don't address the problem. It's like trying to treat lung cancer without stopping smoking. We have to move away from fossil fuels and not just commit to try to repair or mitigate the damage. The issue of what countries are going to pay and what countries are going to benefit was the most contentious issue at the biodiversity conference and the climate conference. At the biodiversity conference, countries from the global south walked out at one point because the global north wasn't committing to help protect biodiversity, because rich countries like the United States and Europe, we export our extinction footprint by importing resources from other countries, and then the people who live there don't even necessarily benefit from those. And it's the same thing with the fossil fuel countries. The countries that use the most fossil fuel aren't the countries that pay the steepest price in terms of public health and climate disasters. And so really, we have to address the core of the issue, which is overconsumption by wealthy nations of fossil fuels and other products. And we need to commit to helping the most vulnerable countries. But it all comes back to values. What are we going to value? What are we going to protect? Are we willing to use less stuff to have a livable planet? And so these are big, wicked problems. But the good thing is that more and more people are becoming aware of them and are committed to learning what they can do and taking action to help fight injustice in humanity and in the biological community.
You ended your statements, it seemed to me, on a note of optimism of not just the will, but there's good reason for optimism of the intellect. Give us your sense of the, what are the major developments that we can look to that could, in fact, manage to defeat the interests who are now ransacking the planet?
You know, as the Saving Life on Earth campaign director, part of my job is outreach. And so I talk to students all the time, from kindergarteners all the way through grad students. And the thing that gives me hope is that this generation coming up has so much awareness and so much passion. Like, I talk to kids in grade school who are doing projects to fight climate change. And a decade ago, we wouldn't even have total agreement that it's happening. But now there are young people who are passionate to do something about it. I just spoke with a college student in the Midwest who's doing a project of her own accord on pollinators. She's passionate about talking to people about the pollinator crisis. And so interacting with these young individuals who are educated and inspired and also taking action gives me hope. When I have despair, I just remember that action is the antidote to despair. And so if we all do work together, we can keep a livable planet.
Yeah. May I add just one point? Another reason for optimism is that we have the forces to protect diversity and manage climate change and maintain it within manageable levels and then bring the concentrations down. Has sufficient technologies and resources to deal with those problems and restore to health the ecosystem upon which life depends, human life included. Tara Curry, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thanks so much, Bill. I'm so happy to talk about these things. Thank you for helping raise awareness of them.